Hello and welcome to the Social Media Show podcast, sponsored by Social Pilot, the social media management and scheduling tool. I'm your host, Jonathan Pollinger, and I'm a social media trainer. In each episode, you'll learn how an inspiring personality uses social media, and you'll pick up some cutting-edge techniques and top tips. You can also watch the show live at 9 a.m. on Mondays, or catch the replay on my Facebook page at facebook.com/PollingerSocial. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Social Media Show. In episode 19, I chat with Adrian Malpass, executive coach and mentor and creator of the GlossBiz hashtag. If you enjoy the show, please subscribe and leave a review. Hello and welcome everybody to the Social Media Show. My name is Jonathan Pollinger, and whether you are watching live, watching the replay, or listening to us on the podcast, you are very welcome on this slightly chilly Monday morning. So my guest today is Adrian Malpass, executive coach and mentor. Welcome to the show, Adrian.
Hello, JP. All right?
I am very well, thanks. Great to have you on the show today. Lots of things to talk about, because from a social media perspective, you are the inventor of the GlossBiz hashtag, and we're going to talk more about that later on. But perhaps kick off with executive coach and mentor. What does that mean?
Okay, so I spent the first 15 years of my career in the corporate world. So Philips, Mattel, Siemens, great big corporates, basically running businesses. Yeah. So I fell out of the corporate world for all sorts of reasons back in the early 2000s. Discovered this new thing at the time called coaching in a corporate sense, and it was quite new to the UK, very big in America already, quite new to the UK. So I did all my professional qualifications, which is still these days still quite unusual for people who work in the coaching field. But I specialize in
working. Do you actually have qualifications? Because I guess, yeah, can anyone set themselves up as, you know, and just call themselves
theoretically
a business coach?
Yes, but yeah. The profession, the people that refer to themselves as professionals, and I'm one of them, we go through a professional qualification procedure. Okay. And in my case, my qualifications are awarded through the University of Wolverhampton.
Right. Okay.
That was 15 years ago I did that, and obviously yeah. There's an awful lot more people in the coaching field now. But I specialize in working with business owners, senior managers, directors of small and medium-sized businesses, almost exclusively in the professional services field and almost exclusively in the Cotswolds.
Okay, so the professional services field, was that an area that you decided to target from the word go, or have you sort of like worked your way into specialising in that sector?
Yeah, I think I've worked. The second option is probably the most accurate one. I seem to have become better known in the professional services field, and yeah. You know, if you have a particular positive outcome with a company in a particular field, they'll often let people
talk about it to others. Yeah,
absolutely. And then it goes on and on and on. And next thing you know, the field opens up, and there you are. I mean, I still work with some companies who are outside of that field, but probably at any one time, 2/3 of my active clients are within the professional services field. So,
yeah,
long may it last, you know.
Exactly. So if you like, I don't know, if you got an inquiry from Edinburgh, would you actually do that, or would you pass that on to somebody else?
I could, if the option of having the sessions via Skype or by phone was realistic for that client.
Depending on the amount of work and what sort of work they wanted doing.
Yeah, I mean, most clients I work with, I actually work with them on a face-to-face basis. Of course, in Edinburgh, it's not something you can't just nip down the road and go and see them for an hour. It's each visit is a day at least, I would think. But also, because of the network I have of fellow professionally qualified coaches, I can always refer them to somebody I know or somebody I'm aware of who can deliver a good quality service in the Edinburgh area.
Yep. So if you're helping a business improve, typically how long does that process take? Can you, do you start to see results while you're still working with them, or is it a case kind of like, which is like case with what I do, social media training, like you do the work and then the results sort of come afterwards? How does it work with yourself?
What I do, think of it more as evolution rather than revolution. So it is about gently building layer after layer after layer, so that the business, and importantly the people within the business, are developed and enhanced in terms of the way they, that their understanding, their knowledge, their skill base, and their ability to implement what's right for their business. The single biggest challenge is no two businesses are the same. Every business is as individual as the people within it. So there is, if anybody comes to you, you know, with a coach badge on and says, here's a one size fits all approach, well, that isn't going to happen. You know, that isn't going to work, because one size fits all is really, in my view, just another way of saying one size fits none in my field. There are certain aspects to, you know, business training, business development that you know, one size does fit everyone more or less, but not in my field. It's very much a bespoke service.
So it sounds like it's very people focused then, from what you're saying. So you have to get to know the kind of people that are in the company as a sort of starting point.
Definitely. Yeah. So I come from the world of psychology, and helping people is something I've always enjoyed doing. But I've also been really careful in helping people, not just to understand themselves, but helping me understand them so that I can deliver what's right for them.
Okay. So when it comes to marketing, how important would you say marketing is for a business these days? And how has that changed over the 15 years that you've been working with businesses?
So, well, since I jumped out of the corporate world, marketing has changed enormously. If I think back in 2002, for example, when I was just coming out of, I'd spent some time in consultancy, came out of that having been in consultancy within PowerJet. Things like Twitter and Facebook, you'll know better than me. When did Facebook start?
2004.
Yeah. Okay, so Facebook hadn't started then. Twitter definitely hadn't started then.
Yeah.
LinkedIn. When was LinkedIn?
Well, LinkedIn's actually the oldest of the lot. I mean, it wasn't really doing a lot, but it was actually before Facebook, 2003.
But LinkedIn was best known as a recruitment tool, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah, at the early years, yeah. Some people still see it as that now, yeah.
So when I first started my own business, marketing was still done in a very traditional way, through print, through media, through networking. And networking, you know, we didn't have the an iPhone then. No. I think in 2002, I was using a Nokia 6310i.
Oh yeah, very famous phone. Yeah.
And for those watching who,
I think they've just reissued those, haven't they?
A 6310i, it was one of those amazing phones. You could use it as much as you wanted, and you only recharged it once a week.
Wow, yeah, that's different to nowadays. and you could play Snake on it.
You could play Snake on it, absolutely. And send text messages, of course.
Yeah.
But that was it. You couldn't do anything else. But marketing then was just done in what people would probably now consider to be a more traditional way. So everyone you met gave a business card, whereas, you know, cards, the volume of business cards you get through now are much, much lower. Email existed, but nowhere near in the volume or extent that it is now. Mm. If ever you sent somebody a proposal, it was almost always on paper, on printed sheets of paper. And I remember when I first started working for myself, I actually had some letterheads printed. Now, of course, you know, when was the last time you saw a letterhead printed? Happens very, very rarely.
Very, sometimes you're kind of like
need it for some sort of identification process or something like that, but that's pretty rare.
But it's then, of course, social media started, and the whole influence of social media, and particularly technology, when we started to use email more to communicate, to network, to send people, you know, when we had the ability to send people documents without, you know, the whole
through the
system grinding to a halt. You know, and then somebody suddenly realized that you need to be able to give people sat using their PCs the ability to create PDFs. And then when that happened, because PDF was only, it was through a very expensive piece of Adobe software that, you know, if you didn't have it, you couldn't create your own PDF.
Yeah, much easier now.
When they suddenly said, well, hang on, let people create their own PDFs, which means they can then send them via email, and all of a sudden, you know, the world changed.
So interesting to see that Richard says that he still designs letterheads for clients, so it's not not completely gone away.
I know, generally larger professional services companies do still buy letterheads. And I think that's partly because of the volume.
Yeah, you probably lasts them a long time.
Invoices or, you know, statements, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, they just, you know, need the volume of stuff there. But, you know, Richard, obviously you and I both know Richard, he's a designer. If you're still designing letterheads, that's hopefully a good sign. And of course, print, the way print is done now has changed dramatically. It's done in digital form, whereas, 15, 20 years ago, it was done on, you know, wet litho. Even letterheads were done litho, whereas now litho
is really
a very large sheet, very high volume.
If you were to, talking about other business sectors then, sort of within sector's not quite the right word, but departments then of a business, what else would you say has either changed the most? Well, two questions really. What other sectors perhaps have changed a lot, and what's sort of the most important sort of sector of the business? You know, would you say that's like HR or a different kind of department
within the business? If you're okay, so if people start a business, they tend to do it for two fundamental reasons. That they've either got a good business idea or they're really good at something. They don't generally start a business because they're good at running a business.
Yeah, that's very true. Yeah.
And yet 80% of new startups in the UK won't make it to 5 years.
Yeah, it's shocking, isn't it? Yeah.
For the fundamental reason that they're not run properly.
Yeah.
The only thing I've ever done well is run businesses. So this is looking at the leadership, the management, the strategy, the way all the departments work together.
Got you.
You know, so
operations then as such is what you're saying.
Which
sort of spans the whole business really. Yeah.
I do the bit that people, you know, with respect, often forget about. As in, most people think they can run a business well, right up until the point when they realize they can't.
Yeah. Possibly because they're enjoying it and sort of like focusing on the stuff that they want to do and forgetting to actually run the business.
If you're experiencing success early on and you've got, you know, the money's coming in, why not enjoy it? You know, you should be able to do okay. It's when things start to, that initial circle has gone through, it's always that bit more challenging to run the business well compared to in the early days when you're just sort of bathed in the glory, if you like. You and I are both long enough in the tooth to have been through a few economic cycles in our
life. What are you saying?
we've seen the good times and not so good times, nationally.
But
how you go through the tougher times is the telling thing.
Yeah, and you might be sort of hinting at it there, but if I was to ask quite a sort of tough question, but like you mentioned, 80% of businesses failing within the first 5 years. So what would you say would be the, this is the sort of thing you'd probably charge for quite a lot of money for actually, but what would you say would be the single thing, what single thing could they do to try and avoid that scenario?
So if I was working with a business owner that's got a couple of years experience with their business, the one single thing I would say to them is remember to look at the big picture.
Okay.
Quite often people are so focused on what they're doing that they forget to look at the whole picture. So that includes the finances. A lot of people avoid looking at the finances for the simple reason they don't like working with numbers.
Yeah.
Okay. Get your accountant to do it then.
Yep.
Ask your accountant to give you some forecasts. Learning how to understand forecasts is probably one of the most valuable things you can do, because it will help you to forecast, for example, when is likely to be a good time to bring on a new member of staff.
Yeah, whereas a lot of people I would get, would you say that when you go into companies, a lot of sort of forgetting to do that or not doing it as much as they should?
A lot of companies don't do it as much or as well as they should, in my view.
Okay.
A lot of it is also about habit. You know, if they're really busy bringing in the sales of a successful business, quite often, you know, there's only 24 hours in the day. There's only so much they can do at any one time. But this is where using the people that are, if you're good at building websites, if you're good at, as Richard was saying, his work is all digital. If you're good at doing letterheads and designing print and graphics and things like that, stick to what you do best, because that is what will help the company succeed.
Yep.
If running a business, particularly if your business is starting to grow, if running it, developing the strategy for it, leadership and all that sort of thing is not your cup of tea, then get somebody in that can help you do it, because it leaves you to do the things that is making the money and the profits for the business.
Yeah, good advice. Good advice. So, So, moving on to GlossBiz, which perhaps is sort of a thing that throughout the Cotswolds you're associated with. So, I mean, it's kind of like I referred to it as a hashtag in the intro, and indeed, you know, the hashtag is an important part of it. How did that sort of like start off, and what's, tell us the story behind the hashtag.
Oh, crikey, right. So
when was it?
August 2010.
Oh, okay.
So
that long ago. That makes me feel old.
Yeah. 10 years next year. I've always had a thing about local business for local businesses. I'm very well aware that if you spend the money with a local business, much more of that money stays in the local community than if you spend it with an organization, for example, that has its headquarters the other end of the country.
Yep.
To give you some figures on that, it's round, for every pound you spend with a business that's locally owned, about an extra 50p in the pound stays in the local community.
Mm-hmm.
Because they tend to use local suppliers, they use local transport people, they employ local people, you know, so on and so on and so on. So it really does make a huge difference. So back in August 2010, I was relatively new to Twitter. And I think after a conversation with you, I'd suddenly sort of worked out what hashtags were.
Okay.
You were running a business gathering once a week or once a fortnight in a pub in Cheltenham.
Probably the Brown Jug on Bath Road or something like that.
Good pint of 6X in there. obviously the conversation, and that's how you and I met, and the conversations we had, I said, this hashtag thing. So I sent out a tweet based on my enthusiasm for local businesses. And I think it was on a Friday, you know, it was a Friday lunchtime, Friday afternoon, something like that. And I just said, come on, this weekend, spend a pound with a locally owned business instead of a nationally owned one. Hashtag GlossBiz. And I thought, well, GlossBiz does what it says on the tin. It's Gloucestershire business.
Yeah, got a nice ring to it. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. It's short, it's simple. Hopefully people will sort of take to it. And it went berserk. It went absolutely crazy. Within 24 hours, that tweet, according to, you know, various tools online, that tweet had reached New York and Macedonia.
Wow.
Within 24 hours. That's the first time it was used.
Any ideas, number of people?
That first tweet, I guess you could dig it out at some point, but I imagine it's quite a few.
Yeah.
And then, of course, it just sort of rolled on from there, and people started adopting it straight away.
Other people started using it,
And it was one of those things. It just sort of struck a chord with people and said, well, okay, this is easy to use. It's, and importantly, it's easy to remember. And here we are over 9 years down the road now, and people are still using it. If you look at Twitter, the GlossBiz hashtag appears in hundreds and hundreds of tweets every single day.
Yeah, I am now then, right? And so this is interesting. Last one was from a guy called Greg Mason, talking about the Christmas markets and planning your purchases. And amongst other hashtags, he's included the GlossBiz hashtag from just 20 minutes ago. So it's still in pretty consistent, pretty regular regular use. And if I scroll down, there's loads from yesterday here about all sorts of different subjects. Yeah. So
Sunday, you know, which most people wouldn't associate with being a business day.
No, true. Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, there's an awful lot of use of the GlossBiz hashtag.
Yeah.
And of course, now that LinkedIn have reintroduced hashtags again, you can use the GlossBiz hashtag across all social media platforms. And the number of unique users it reaches every week, I think the last sort of tool I used to assess that was something in excess of 1.3 million unique users a week.
Well, wow, that's amazing. That's a huge number of people.
Yeah. You know, okay, GlossBiz it's localized, as in it's aimed at Gloucestershire. But it's interesting that businesses outside Gloucestershire are using it to attract the attention of businesses in Gloucestershire.
Okay. Yeah. That makes sense.
Vice versa, you know, so and for those of you listening and watching in the counties around Gloucestershire, there's absolutely no reason why you couldn't do a similar hashtag. You know, Wiltshire could be WiltsBiz, Worcestershire could be WarksBiz, you know, WRCSBiz, Oxford could be OxenBiz.
Yeah, I think there are a few, but they're more around towns, aren't they? I think rather than counties. So the counties is an interesting approach. So I mean, a simple tip there then, which you know I've been sort of shouting about in typically sort of like Cheltenham or Gloucester workshops is to use it if you're in business in Gloucestershire. It's just use it, isn't it? Especially if you're promoting something or talking about anything business related, because you're essentially, like you say, it's good to keep things simple. You're essentially joining a conversation with about a million people in it. So what could be what could be bad about that?
Yeah, and importantly, absolutely free.
Yeah, that's very true. That's very true.
You know, I mean, so how else are you going to attract the attention of all those people for nothing?
Yeah, absolutely. Legally. So from the hashtag, you know, it's actually a company now, and you run events on a regular basis. So tell us about the events. I think you do you do a lunch and dinner thing these days and networking? Okay.
I think about 5 years ago now, 5 or 6 years ago, a charity here in Cheltenham, Winston's Wish, which looks after, it's a charity for bereaved children.
Yes.
and they do a lot of really good work. And they launched a campaign called the Great British Brekkie Week, and they wanted to raise money by people organising charity breakfasts. So I knew the general manager of the five-star hotel up the road called Ellenborough Park. So I went to see him and I said, do you reckon we could do a business breakfast? I'd never done one. And he said, yeah, go on, let's have a go. You know, we'll stick our hands in our pockets and you charge people for tickets, and then all the money for the tickets and everything else goes to the charity.
Fantastic.
He said, how many people do you think will turn up? I said, don't know, 30 or 40? Mm-hmm. 60 people turned up.
Wow.
We raised £562 in an hour and a half.
Nice.
And as they were leaving, they were saying, when's the next one?
So you thought, you better organise another one.
I've either backed myself into a corner here, or, you know, this is something that the business community is saying it wants.
And you had no experience of organising events before that?
The only event I'd organised before that was on that scale was TEDx Cheltenham.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
In 2012. So, yeah. But they were leaving. So, okay, we started doing breakfasts, and to make the breakfast a bit more interesting, a bit more different, rather than having a guest that stands up and presents, I basically interviewed someone. You've been the guest.
Yeah, I have been interviewing.
I interview someone in front of a live audience of 64 people.
Yeah, that's fun.
So I do four of those a year. They sell out really quickly. Then people said, well, I can't always make it to breakfast. Any chance you could do a lunch? So I started doing lunch.
Right.
And of course, again, because it's Gloss Beers, the important thing is to remember that they all use Gloucestershire-owned venues.
Yes, yeah.
So, you know, but tries so that more of the money we spend stays in the community. Every event is run on a not-for-profit basis and organised voluntarily. So it's trying to provide very good value for the people that attend. There's no membership, so people can just turn up. If they want to come to one event and no more, then there's no commitment on their part.
And am I right in saying it's non-profit making? You basically plow the money back into the event, or do you manage to sort of gift some to charities as well on occasion?
Because I give my time to it, it does take up somewhere between 20 and 25 days a year of my time.
Yeah, I can imagine, yeah.
That's my way of giving a bit back, but it's on a not-for-profit basis, so I don't take a penny from it.
Yeah.
Started off with breakfast at Ellenborough Park, now do six lunches a year at the Mayflower in Cheltenham, and have recently started doing four lunches a year at Tewkesbury Park in Tewkesbury.
Okay, so more and more. And is the lunch in the same format as the breakfast with a guest and everything, or slightly different?
The lunch is just a standard business lunch, so you turn up with the guests. But every single event is specifically designed for you to turn up and just be yourself, develop those important business relationships, and make the connections in simple ways that perhaps get with other events. So you don't get told where to sit, you don't get told when to swap business cards.
Nice and informal. I like that.
You just turn up and be yourself.
I'll have to come along. I haven't been for a while.
Well, next time you're in town, let me know.
Sounds good. And Gloss Beers Limited, is there anything, I don't know, exciting about that, or is it just a vehicle that you're kind of like using for the events?
It's just a vehicle there really to protect the brand.
Okay.
An important brand.
Yeah.
I've trademarked Gloss Beers, so it is a registered trademark now.
Yeah.
Simply because I wanted to protect it for the businesses of the county.
Yeah.
You know, as an entity, Gloss Beers reaches one in three businesses in the county now.
Wow. That's huge. Huge
penetration. Over 27,000 business people are connected. Yeah. Through Gloss Beers one way or another. There's groups on Facebook, LinkedIn groups are a bit of a struggle to keep going.
Hopefully LinkedIn's going to revamp groups fairly soon and they'll pick up. Oh yeah, did you know, whilst we're on the subject of social media, my favourite subject, Did you know LinkedIn have just launched events last week, so you could stick all your lunches and breakfast on LinkedIn as an event now?
What you mean? You mean they've brought back the events that they did?
Oh, yeah, they were there years ago. You're right. Oh. Yeah. I forget how long in the tooth you are, Adrian, sometimes. Yeah, you probably put the Winston's Wish event on LinkedIn when they had events back in the day. Yeah.
So where do we find events on LinkedIn?
Oh, so it's off the if you go to the homepage and then to the left-hand side, it's on the left there between groups and hashtags, I think, from memory. But you'll see it on the left there. Yeah, and you can set it up on mobile as well. It's the same sort of concept as a Facebook event. So you put in date, time, venue, details, description, all that sort of stuff. But the key thing is, of course, it's a business, it's a business event you've got there, and it's business connections that you've got in LinkedIn, and you can just invite them all. So,
they're going to be pleased about that.
Quite nice. Well, there isn't actually an invite all function, but of course, in theory, you can invite them all. But it's better that way, isn't it? Because then you can select which people you actually want to choose. Can't believe we've been chatting for half an hour. So just sort of coming to the end now. You mentioned a few social networks there for people finding out about GlossBiz. Is that the best option, or is there a website as well? Or
There's no website, no formal website. That's one of the things that I keep playing with. But, that's for another time, really. There's an online blog, so if you go to glossbiz.com/blog, there's some blog articles from other businesses that have, offered articles up for the blog. So I'm quite happy to consider other articles. Every business gets a mention if they go on there. So the beauty of GlossBiz, of course, is that every business gets treated equally. Whether you're the chief exec of a very large business or somebody starting up a part-time brand new business, everybody gets treated exactly the same.
So it's a huge business opportunity then, for any networking opportunity for anyone to go along.
Social media platform you use, just search GlossBiz.
Fantastic. And for your executive coaching and mentoring services, option there?
If you search for my name, you'll find me.
Right.
That's Malpass, 1L, 2Ss.
Fantastic. That's nice and nice and easy. And final question. So I picked up from our conversation there that you like a pint of ale from time to time. And I believe you're also partial to a Barolo. Is that right?
Yeah, a glass of Barolo, which is an Italian red from the north of Italy. You see it here in the UK, but not that often. It's in my dim and distant past, I had a wine business, which was a hobby that got way out of hand. it's just one of those things, just one glass, perhaps with a very rich dark chocolate dessert or, some cheese or pate or something.
Sounds nice. My mouth's watering just thinking about it, so I'm gonna have to try one of those. So
maybe 9:30 in the morning is
actually I had a laugh the other day because I was interviewed for a podcast, which was a nice change, last week, and they asked me what my drink of choice was, and I said, well, depending on the time of day, a cappuccino or a Malbec. So anyway, that was at about 10 o'clock in the morning, so they brought me a cappuccino, and I said, oh, it was kind of like hoping for a Malbec.
You're into your gins now.
I do like a gin. Yeah. But just final question before we go. So if you were to go for a pint or a glass of Barolo with any living person, who would that be and why?
Ooh.
It's a question I ask all my guests.
Any living person?
Yeah, it has to be living person. Yeah.
Ooh, crikey. There's so many to choose from. I think it would actually, one of the
guys... You might have a dinner party then with a few bottles of Barolo and a few barrels of beer.
One of the guys I think I'd probably find very interesting to go and have a chat with is Sir David Attenborough.
Oh, yeah, good choice.
Simply because he, with the greatest respect to him, he has been around quite a while. But if you hear him interviewed on all sorts of different subjects, he has so much knowledge on so many different subjects, not just climate change, not just the, yep. the wildlife world and all the rest of it, but so many things. And he's one of those people that thinks really clearly. And he's, what, 91, 92?
Oh, is 90? He? I didn't realize he was in his 90s. Wow.
He's 90 plus. And he's absolutely as sharp as a razor. So I would think probably him.
Good choice. And you'd be firing lots of questions at him by the sound of it.
But other than that, you know, there are lots of people from the business world who are particularly locally. You know, there's a company here in Gloucestershire called Renishaw.
Yeah.
The two guys that started that in their shed 30-odd years ago, you know, I would, I'd very much like to sort of spend some time chatting with them. Or, of course, a guy that's got quite a lot of profile locally, director of Superdry, Julian Dunkerton.
Yeah, yeah.
So he's actually notoriously difficult to get hold of.
Right. So another good choice for that reason. Yeah. Reason then. But I'm sure you could make that happen, Adrian. So might definitely worth a try. So it's been fascinating talking to you, and thank you very much for answering all my questions today. Pleasure having you on. So thank you, Adrian Malpass.
Yeah, good to see you. See you again soon.
Thank you for listening to the Social Media Show podcast sponsored by Social Pilot. And if you'd like to learn more about how I can help you make the most of social media for your business or organization, please visit pollingersocial.co.uk, or you can find me on social media at pollingersocial.